Welcome to COVID Response Project's interview concerning Indiana. Today, we are talking to Anna. Anna, thank you for joining us. Tell us a little about yourself.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt. My name's Anna. I live in Indiana, and it rhymes. That's very convenient. I am a resident of Indianapolis, Indiana, which is the capital, and I work at a research institute that has medical record data, which was in high demand during the pandemic. And we certainly got COVID testing data and created a dashboard and kind of, you know, parallels the state's dashboard. So that's sort of been our obsession over the past year.
That's super cool. And I'm kind of disappointed that we're gonna, that we have to wait to get to the end of that, but we do have to follow the format. So that will be interesting to get to. Let's start where we usually start, which is talking about masking. How has masking been in Indiana in your area?
In my area, people have, I think they have responded well to the mandates. They have mostly masked up. I think it's very different in rural areas. I have a sister that lives kind of outside of a smaller town, and I think it's been a very different experience. But in my area, I would say 95% or more of people are masked every time I go to the store or go out in public. I started taking karate lessons this year, and almost everybody there masks. So yeah, I think pretty good coverage as far as masks are concerned.
And Indiana has had a mask mandate?
Yes.
Okay.
We've had one since last year. The statewide mandate ended on April 6th. So they waited until the NCAA tournament, which Indianapolis hosted, was over. And then I think the next day, the mask mandate was set to end. So they definitely planned that for that. But we still have a county mask mandate because Indianapolis, Marion County, it's like the same, takes up the same space. And so the mayor has decided that we're still under one until June 7th. And then people who are vaccinated can start unmasking. But I know in surrounding counties, they don't have those mask mandates. So people are starting to post pictures on social media this week of, I went in the store and somebody smiled at me and I cried. Just appreciating that sense of normalcy of like, hey, there are places around us you can drive to in 10 minutes where people are not required to wear masks.
Right. Okay. It has been, in your area, in your county, has it been similar outside? Have people been masking up even when they're outside or not?
For the most part, no, not outside. Yeah, I think the mask mandate was for indoors. We've had church outside for the past year and have not masked at church at all when we've been outside. And people, very rarely you'll see somebody walking around the neighborhood with a mask. Actually, last summer I went to the zoo on the 4th of July and they did require masks. So people were wearing masks outside.
Okay.
A little bit, but more because they were at a place that required it, not just in general walking down
sure,
the street.
Sure. Okay. All right. So with schools, when did they close? When did they open? How has it been?
Yeah, the schools closed right away, went to e-learning in March 2020. So they stayed e-learning for the rest of the school year. And for the fall, they were giving people a lot of options. So I know from friends and from a local township Facebook group that they were doing about 12 weeks at a time. You'd sign up for, do you want your kid to do e-learning or do you want your kid to go in person? And of course, if there was COVID spread, then they'd send people home, but that was more on an individual basis. But you go home, you quarantine. Very rarely did I hear of an entire class being quarantined or an entire school shutting down again. So they tried to stay open. And then in January of this year, they really opened up the Indianapolis Public Schools again, so that everybody was going back in person. But I did have a coworker in their particular school district for her kids. They had set different guidelines that were stricter than the Indianapolis Public Schools in general. Okay. And so when IPS said, okay, January, whatever the exact date was, everybody can go back, their school said, no, we said when we reached this level of positive cases or what have you. And so they waited until February before they went back in person.
Okay. Okay. Has it been different between public schools and private schools?
My impression is that it has been. I think the Christian schools, private schools in my area were back in person last fall, completely not offering the same hybrid options as public schools.
Okay. And yeah, you talked about not sending entire classes home. Okay, so that's, I think that covers the school stuff. With restaurants, what have been the restrictions? When did they open up? Have people been following the restrictions? Because that's been something that we've seen is a lot of restaurants just kind of like quietly skirt the restrictions if they think they can get away with it.
Yeah, I think they have followed the restrictions as far as I'm aware around here. Our state had a color coding system last year, and they would color code each county and then give you guidelines. What are the restrictions? And so they were at 25% for a long time until things improved, and then they could open up to about 50%. But still, everything's pretty spread out inside the restaurants. I have a friend at church who worked in a restaurant, and they're still not back full time. So, you know, he's still working at Amazon, which is kind of everybody's default around here right now, is go work for Amazon until your normal job comes back. And they just don't have the hours to give them at this point. But I think in a couple of weeks, when the mask mandate for the county goes away, I think it's back up to at least 75%. So getting a lot closer to normal.
Okay. Have there been restrictions, similar restrictions, or maybe exemptions for outdoor dining from restaurants or from food trucks or anything like that?
Yeah, I think that's been encouraged. I know they shut down one of the major streets downtown last summer so that there could be more outside dining. They could place more tables out there. So I do know that was a popular option.
Okay, so there was a quick recognition that outdoor dining was sort of an escape, not escape valve, but like a release valve for a lot of these restaurants.
Yes.
Okay. When it comes to churches, when did services start coming back?
Services started coming back in May last year. My church waited until about June. Our pastor sent out an email, and there was some controversy. Different people wanted different things, and they kind of went, whoa, okay, that did not go over how we thought. So we're going to take a couple more weeks to figure this out. But I think May was when we could start meeting again, and there were some restrictions about size limitations. You know, I think it was 25% for a while was what we were asked to do. They asked people over 65 to stay home. But it was more of a recommendation. It was not a hard and fast rule. And we went back meeting outside so that we didn't have to have any capacity restrictions and had rooms spread out and not be in an enclosed space.
Okay. How was it? You've mentioned there was some disagreement within the church. On which side was it? Was it the cautious side being a cautious side or an incautious side? How was the congregation? Was it split over one direction or another?
Yeah, I think we actually had people in all directions. So we had some people who are so overly cautious. I think one family still hasn't come back. Some took a long time to come back to church in person, even outdoors. And then we had people who thought that the church was wrong to submit to the government's mask mandate. And so more recently, a few families have refused to come if we were meeting indoors over the winter, if they were going to be required to wear a mask. So we really had people going both ways, and then some of us in the middle, following the mask mandate, coming to church every week. So yeah, a huge variety of opinions there.
Okay. And online, and you mentioned your church has been doing online services as well as like a supplement to this.
Yeah, so we have been streaming our services, which was new for us. We're a pretty small congregation and we weren't doing that before. We got a grant from, actually we'd have to look at the name of it. But there was a group in Indiana, a nonprofit that was offering grants to churches, up to $5,000 if the church put in 10% to purchase equipment to be able to stream our services online. So that was great for us since we did not have any equipment, and I don't know whose old iPhone we were getting by on at the beginning, but we were able to, you know, get some decent equipment to stream our services more regularly, which I know was a great blessing to older members of the congregation, especially, but other people, you know, as they got sick or had to stay home for one reason or another.
That's fantastic. That's the first I've heard of a grant for doing that sort of thing. I know there were people who were trying to help on an individual basis or going church to church, but a grant sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, we definitely took advantage of that.
Okay. Moving on to movie theaters, and if you have any information around live performances, either theater or music, we'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, so movie theaters, you know, I did a little research because I haven't gone to the theater in the past year, but I did try to purchase a ticket a couple weeks ago, and it looked like there were lots of seats available. When I looked, nothing was blocked off, so I think once you start purchasing a ticket, it must start blocking seats. It did pop up a warning and say, you know, the seats are going to be blocked in certain areas. You won't be able to sit this close to other people. Mm-hmm. And certainly a list of restrictions, like the water fountains won't be open. You can't get refills on your food. And I think it was 50% capacity in the theaters. But I was excited to see that the theaters near me were still open and still kicking. So they'll be there.
Good. Right. Yeah. Hopefully this will be quite the summer for movie theaters, I hope. Okay. So tell me a little bit about the work that you've done with health and informatics data. You don't have to tell me where you work or anything, but I'm curious to see. You said there was a lot of demand for it. Like who was asking and what were they using it for?
Yeah, so we support research at Indiana University. At my workplace is a nonprofit that supports that. And my team specifically does that through data. And usually we're creating custom data sets for researchers. So as soon as the pandemic hit, there was of course need for a dashboard, and they wanted to track all the testing. And then for people who are testing positive, start tracking hospitalizations, ER visits, other outcomes that we had in the data sources. And then it seemed like everybody for a while had a COVID spin on their own normal research area. Like, I study breast cancer. Now I want to study patients who didn't go to the doctor soon enough and didn't get diagnosed. Or I study appendicitis, and now I want to see who did not go deal with their appendicitis because of the pandemic. So it's like everybody kind of added a new project. So we've been very, very busy. Lately, vaccinations have been in high demand, and looking at breakthrough cases to see where are those occurring and how many and what are the outcomes for those folks.
Okay. Interesting. I'm curious, do you think the additional projects that have sort of a COVID spin, are those based on that's where sort of the research money is now, or is it more of a just curiosity thing?
There's certainly a lot of research opportunities now, or grant opportunities. I think last year it was more they were interested in it, and it was a convenient way to take their research. Recently, a lot of the grant opportunities have been related to PASC, which is basically, I forget what it stands for, but some kind of long COVID.
Yeah.
So lots of grants went in for that a couple months ago, and we have not heard back yet. There should be a lot of money in studying what are those long-term effects of COVID and how is it impacting people's lives. We also work closely with the School of Public Health here. And so I'm a little bit familiar with some of their research. I know I sent you a link for a study that was done last year in Indiana where they tried to do a true random sample of the entire state, which was really neat. And I think was the first time somebody was trying that in the US for COVID to say, first, how can we even get a list of all Indiana residents? So they took everybody who paid their taxes in 2019 and then took BMV records to fill in the gaps and then tried to recruit them to take a COVID test and then looked at the true prevalence. So that was really neat. And I know it was a lot of work. And I think they did four different phases of it. They did the random sampling four different times.
That's fantastic. I will have to take a look at that study because it sounds different than almost anything that I've seen so far. The only truly massive studies that I have seen the results of can come from the UK, where they were doing some really intense studies on school children, because they're basically like all school children are a part of this study. And so, so you ended up with a lot of data around that. It feels like if small things matter, big things should matter more, and you should be able to see bigger differences. And this was a big difference. You also wrote about the Indy 500 and how Indiana has responded with the Indy 500 for 2020 and then the anticipated 2021 race. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the 2021 race is coming up this weekend, and they are allowing some fans in. So hopefully that goes well and we don't see any spread from that. So Indy 500 is one of the largest sporting events in Indiana. It usually draws 300,000 people, and usually, you know, people are packed together, not only in the stands, but there's a music area called the Steak Pit and just people crammed together and drinking. And so last year did not seem like a great idea. And so they tried to move it first. They moved it up to August, which is it's always on Memorial Day weekend, but they moved it to August, I assume in the hope that things would clear up, but it did not. And so they had no fans there last year, which was a pretty big deal for Indianapolis. So this year they're planning to have it with about a third capacity, about 135,000 people there. Lately they've been using it as a COVID mass vaccination site, which is where I got my first vaccine, which is really fun because you drive all through the infield and then you end up in Gasoline Alley, and they said, all right, pull into garage 11. So you pulling into garage right by the track, kind of a pull through garage, and stick your arm out the window. Yeah,
it was fun. That's great. I did not realize it's like a whole dog and pony show. That's great. Okay, great. Yeah, fantastic. Is there anything else you wanted to bring to light that's been happening in Indiana or near you?
I think that covers the highlights. You know, I think for me personally, I wrote about how I feel like I've gotten to know my neighbors better. I feel like this has been a good year for connecting to people in my immediate vicinity and just making sure they're taken care of, and just having people to talk to and interact with who are not on Zoom has been a big deal. And so neighbors, getting to know neighbors better has been a huge perk of the pandemic.
That's good. I've noticed that where I am too. And I really hope that sort of thing continues. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time and for your writing. And we really look forward to, I guess, hearing more from you or... But yeah, thank you for helping out here.
Yeah, happy to share what's going on in Indiana.